Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Annie Lindstrom. I am your host of the show, and I want to let you know that Talkupy is a show that features conversations with people who do good things for community. Please go to talkupy.net for more information or to contact me. That's talkupy.net. You can also follow the show on Twitter at talkupy_radio. And definitely looking to up that count a little bit, especially when I'm asking people to be guests now. Even though I don't know Twitter, social media, I don't know what's going on with me in social media, but I would welcome you to follow my show on Twitter if you would. That would be great. As far as announcements go, I did want to talk about the Stitcher. We did get on Stitcher, which is a podcast aggregator, last week. And we've been on iTunes for a long, long time, but Stitcher is great because it's pretty easy to access for people with Androids, and you can get it in your Apple Store as well. So if you have a Google Play, just go in there. And I'm actually going to put a blog up with the other podcasts that I listen to because there are some really, really excellent ones. In fact, two of them that really inspired me to get back on the air, Home of the Brave and Rumble Strip Vermont, are just ones that if you like this show, I know you'll like that show. I also want to give a shout out to everybody who's been listening and giving me a lot of feedback and a lot of encouragement. I've done like a lot of shows since starting up two Fridays ago. I think this is number 5. So I'm out of the gate real fast here, and we have another one scheduled for Thursday. We're going to be with Ed Woodham, and he is with Art in Odd Places. They're having an install on 14th Street in New York starting October 7th. That is going to be the bomb. I mean, it's going to just, no, wait a minute, you can't say that. It's going to be awesome, and it's going to be on 14th Street in New York, and it's just so cool. I love it, and you'll hear more about that on Thursday. I got to actually do the promo tonight because I just got things rolling here really fast. Also, I want to just say thank you to everybody who came to rally around an Occupy DC-er who had passed away in September. And his name is Mark Bear Parker. And our friend of the show, John Zangas, who we were with when the show aired last week on Thursday, he was from the mall talking to us when the Pope was addressing Congress, and he was with the BXE Fasters, and we just had a really great show. But John and Ann Metter kind of took up for this fellow who was a part of Occupy DC and took pictures for them, and they loved him. He was a homeless man who really kind of found his raison d'etre with coming into the group and becoming a photographer. And John and Ann wanted to raise money to see that he got a proper cremation and burial, and they have raised all but $91. So if you want to go to the Indiegogo link, I would suggest just go to dcmediagroup.us and look at the story for Mark Bear Parker and read it. And, you know, even a dollar helps just to make the goal all the way. And anything that goes over is going to be used in Housing for All campaign. Any money that goes over will go into that. And John said there's plenty more homeless that are needing help as we get heading into the winter here. Finally, I want to thank Ronald Jenkins for letting me use his song Disorganized Fun to open the show. I'm going to close tonight with my Friday guests, Forrest and the Photons, one of their great songs. And their drummer is actually related to Ronald, which was so fun. That was Friday night show. So go into the archives, everyone, and enjoy that. And I'm going to bring up tonight's guest, who is a good buddy of this show, Mr. Art Tanderup. How are you doing, Art?
And we're doing well.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us tonight on the show. And we had to postpone for a half hour because you, my friend, you are a Nebraska farmer and activist, and you've been working hard on the KXL, keeping that KXL pipeline out of your fields, your farm fields, and for lo these many years now. And you have some, what I think is pretty good news for us tonight. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Today, TransCanada announced that they are dropping out of the court action that we have against them.
And we is the...
About 100 landowners in Nebraska who have filed action against them to stop them from taking our land through eminent domain and to declare Nebraska law, LB 1161, unconstitutional because it was written just for them so that they could fast-track getting that pipeline in the ground.
Right. And if anybody wants to get up to speed on all those things, Art's been on the show before, and we have a lot of good shows in the archives that'll give you, you know, a lot of detail about that. But so you said that TransCanada decided to drop they dropped out of the suit. They're not suing you for the eminent domain anymore based on that unconstitutional law that was written. Or allegedly for them. We better say allegedly.
Right. When they filed eminent domain against us in January, we first got an injunction, and then we took them to court and are claiming that they do not have the right to use eminent domain to take to take our land to use for their pipeline, which is, you know, just for corporate greed. It's not it's not for the good of this country at all.
Right.
And so that's what's happened. And we really believe that they've decided that there's no way they can win this case. So the easiest thing for them to do is to just kind of drop out and drop the action against each of us 100 landowners in each of our counties so that their claim for eminent domain will be taken off our deeds.
Right. And that was, I mean, as I recall in January, I mean, it's like this never-ending, like, well, they've got, you know, there's another card being played every time, you know, and there was something else happened in January, and then this happened. Like, it was just like, well, that's taken off the table now. That, you know, then you guys put it back, you know, you just put the fight back into it by filing this lawsuit. And I remember you telling me that the eminent domain that was being thrust upon you as citizens and landowners there was kind of like they could have your land in perpetuity, that you would have to take care of it and you would be responsible for anything that happened on it, but they would have the right to use it forever and ever.
It's kind of one of those things. Most easements for like pipelines last 50 years,
right?
The life of the pipeline. TransCanada has an easement that's basically non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a permanent easement. It allows them to put that pipeline in your property, and they never have to take it out once it's outlived its usefulness. So consequently, mm-hmm. you're left with an oil cleanup mess or a, you know, chemical cleanup mess.
Right.
So that's going to pollute your land and water. So,
Right. Judging from some of the pictures I saw of some of the construction of that thing, I mean, I just kept thinking if they ever turned it on, it would just, you know, be like Swiss cheese, you know, leak like a sieve. It just, it never made sense to me, you know, in terms of like that they, that there, it wouldn't be practical. They had activists inside taking pictures of, you know, welds that you could basically see through. You know,
yeah.
That when I saw those pictures, I was like, okay, yeah, right. You're going to turn that on? I don't think so. You know, like, what are you doing? What is this all about? And then we had our little theory where we thought, you know, maybe they wanted some water stations too. And I still think they probably wanted that. But and that may still, you know, who knows? I mean, so are you guys, you know, Bold Nebraska and all the other people, you know, that you just had a briefing with everybody, right before this show, you wrote to me, have I heard? And I was like, no, I haven't heard. I was like, wow, we're going to have some pretty excellent breaking news. But are you guys like, do you feel like this is done? Do you get to go back to farming and having square dances again or what?
Oh, no. This thing is far from over. And we're trying to figure out their exact move. And,
right.
You know, we think what they're going to try and do is try to buy time until a new president is elected.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're obviously hoping that it's somebody who is pro-Keystone and
right.
will put this thing in a minute's time. So, you know, we think, you know, they've got a plan. They aren't, you know, they're...
Right.
They've got something up their sleeve, and we don't know exactly what it all involves, but
right.
you know, it looks like right now, oh, they're being good neighbors, they're taking the
exactly.
they're taking these you know,
the
these
thing.
Condemnations away, and yet oh, we should be so thankful for them. And in their
yeah.
press release today, they talked about how you know, we've got to ease the angst with the landowners.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Oh,
are you
yeah.
kidding me?
Well, that wasn't the exact words they used. But,
I'm
going
to have to put
idea...
a link to that in my blog because that sounds pretty funny.
Yeah, I think that was in the Wall Street Journal. I was reading that where they wanted to get on good terms with the landowners. And
right.
So by dropping the eminent domain stuff, they could... That would make us happy and want to just sign with them in an instant. And
So this is really interesting though, because I was telling you that I have a friend who's like really pretty aware. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm more aware on certain issues because I talk to all you people all the time, you know, and I listen to all my shows. Everybody should listen to all my shows. Then they'd really be up on stuff, not because of me, because of my awesome guests. But you know, I just she had said to me, well, now that KXL is over, and I just went. Like, no, you know, but do you get that a lot? Do you think, do people come up to you or do you hear that, or are you just more inside, you know, what's going on and you don't hear that very much? I tend to hear it. I think people are just very like, well, KXL, that's a done deal. It's over. We don't have to worry about it anymore.
Here's what we hear in Nebraska
mm-hmm.
is the people that don't really know what's going on. They say to us, oh, it's okay now. They moved
mm-hmm.
it off the aquifer. They moved it out of the sand hills. And they've not done either one of those things.
Right.
They just moved it away. It's still in the sand hills. It's in the eastern
yeah.
sand hills. And it's still over the Ogallala aquifer. And mm-hmm. but the perception is there that they've moved it to where it's in a safe place. So everybody's
mm-hmm.
in favor of it now. Because if it leaks, it's not going to pollute the aquifer and do all these disastrous things. So, you know, they have great PR campaigns. They,
mm-hmm.
You know, they tell lies very effectively and get people to believe them.
Right. Well, you know, and that goes, I think this is all starting to come together for me, too, because I was at a farmer's market today where people were talking about, oh, the gas prices are so good, it's going under $2. And I'm like... Yeah, okay, but you know, like there's some nefariousness to that too. You know, the oil's been in a glut ever since earlier this year when I had Shane on. You know, same time when the show was going on, and I mean, Fractivist, for those who don't know, Shane Davis. But, you know, we were just talking about the oil glut and everything like that and how prices were going down. And then right after that, I expected to see things plummet, and they just stayed the same. Like, there was a big price fix in. And so I don't think things have changed with the availability of the oil since then. I think there's, you know, just as much gluttiness going on, you know, now as there was then. I think they're just actually choosing to lower the prices, and I think they're doing it to get everybody to feel all like, oh, this is great, you know, like, we love having low gas prices, like, let's, they're our friends, you know, like, to just get this, again, that affinity, you know, that's kind of being pushed, the good neighbors, like, we're your pals, we got gas prices down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, does that seem like that to you? I mean, it's just, to me, it just seems like,
Yeah, and then too, you know, they'll lower it a little bit, and you keep hearing on the news that the price of a barrel of oil keeps dropping, and yet the gas prices are not dropping in proportion to that barrel of oil.
Right, or so, they're dropping, and then they're going. They're just they don't. I mean, they can't. They can only drop so far. Do you know what I mean? It's like, just because I don't know why. I mean, they got to truck it there. They got to pay to get it there and stuff like that. They have to have some margin on it, I guess, you know. But, you know, it's almost like, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, Shell and just the fact, like, one of the things people did that I saw that drove me nuts, so we'll get back to Shell. But I did see something on social media where someone took a picture of a very low gas price and they wrote on it, thanks, Obama. Like, you know, that whole thing, like, everybody gets mad at Obama for doing bad things, but they don't give him credit for the good things. And I just saw that and I was, like, kind of slapping my forehead going, no. You know, like, if you knew the true price of that oil, you know, like, the true price of that oil and how much they're getting propped up. I mean, people like to talk about farmers like you getting subsidies. Excuse me, you know, we know that these oil companies are getting, you know, subsidized up to gigaw, and they're allowed to kind of price as they want and things like that. So it's weird the way that people get confused, and it's understandable, but it's also very, very deadly to me, I think. And it reminds me when we were setting up this show, you know, talking about the press release this morning and all that, there was this ad that I saw, and I was kind of horrified because Blog Talk Radio is running an ad. They may have it on top of my show, actually, tonight with Art, that says, pipelines work. And it's a nice little box ad. And then you told me you had seen it, too, that it was following you around.
Oh, yeah. It follows me all around, and there are other ads as well, you know. And
right.
I say pipelines spill, and they say pipelines work. So.
Mm. Right. And they said, it says, the rest of it says, it's a very small ad. It's in a box and there's text in it. It says that the KXL will. And now, mind you, if they're dropping the lawsuit with you, all right, and saying they want to get better relations with you or, you know, ease up on you, your angst, so to speak, why are they running ads like this just yesterday? you know, it says, The KXL will transport oil safely, minimize environmental impact, and create jobs and enhance energy security. Which that wording now, that what you just said, makes me think, yeah, you're right about the president thing. Like, that's going to be what it's about. You know, oh, this is all about our security, which everything is now. And then right underneath that, it says in very small print, learn more about safety. I think it even has an exclamation point. I don't know. But, I mean, that's pretty bizarre. And then their logo is in green and blue colors, you know, green for the earth and blue for the water and all the stuff that they just trash, you know, up there in Canada and everywhere else they go. But that seems to me, like, I don't know. What do you think about that being run, like, ad nauseum? Right before they drop this suit. That's, like, crazy to me.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, it tells you they're still planning on trying to get this pipeline through. They're just changing strategies. And they don't like when, you know, when there's bad media around them, like, you know, if this lawsuit continues, we would win. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That this law is unconstitutional, and they have no right to take our land via eminent domain. So you know, they're going to lose if they follow through with this. So
right.
they want to cut their losses while they can and take another approach. And at the same time, you know, they're coming up with those recurring themes of, you know, it's energy for us, you know, when in reality, you know, most of it will be shipped overseas to China.
Right.
You know, it's dangerous. It's not safe. You know, they do not use the latest technologies that they could. They use technologies that
right.
allow up to a 2% spill, totally undetected. You know, they.
Right.
You know, everything in that ad is incorrect, and yet, you know, if you put out propaganda enough times, people are going to believe it. So
right.
You know,
maybe
and they're good at that. So.
Mhm. But it must be frustrating. You know, it gives me heart because I can actually imagine how frustrated you must be, like talking to your neighbors. You know what I mean? And they're telling you how it's all good now. I mean, and like me, I'm just trying to tell the regular Joes. But, I mean, you're, like, right there, and you're, like, looking at people saying, this is your state. You know, maybe you want to take a look at what happened in Mayflower, Arkansas. You know, you might want to just look at Enbridge, you know, up in Marshall, Michigan. You just might want to look at a few of those things and see that, you know, maybe, you know, the aquifer. I don't think anyone's going to pollute that aquifer. I'll tell you that. I think they're still doing it for the water. I think now water is worth way more than the oil, to be honest with you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, you know, we can tell that, you know, you go to the grocery store and buy a bottle of water and, you know, you get, 16 ounces and you pay over a buck for it. Well,
right.
compare that to a gallon of gas, you know, water's worth more than oil.
Way more than oil. And way easier to get out, way easier to extract, and you could drain that Ogallala aquifer in no time, you know?
Exactly.
And it would just, that's why I just, we've been talking about this for a long time, you and me, but I think we're right anyway about that. Now, are you still, so are you guys, now they dropped the eminent domain suit, but are you guys still trying to get that amendment taken off the books, or what's going on with that? Are you kind of out of money?
Yeah,
that
1161. Right now everything's up in the air about all the legal issues around what happened today. You know, what is it?
Right.
What does it mean?
Right.
And does it give us the ability to continue the case? You know. Where they have dropped out, does it still give us standing where we can go to the Supreme Court and have that law overturned so that down the road 2 years from now, when they try to go through other channels to put this thing in and that doesn't work, they can come back and use it again on us?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's either got to be taken off the books through the court system or through the legislative process. One way or the other, we have to deal with that law and get it taken care of, because it's bad for Nebraska, it's bad for landowners in Nebraska. So it's got to be taken care of, and it's got to go down one way or the other.
So there's no rest. There's no rest in. I'm trying to think of the town.
No.
Yeah, there's no rest in Hooterville or whatever tonight. But you know, one of the other things too that they have succeeded in doing quite well is empowering the citizenry of Nebraska. You guys have quite a movement going there. You know, you guys are well organized. Obviously, otherwise this suit wouldn't have been dropped. You know, it's funny because sometimes when you try to be the big bully, sometimes the protagonist, you know, turns out to be the hero of the story. And you guys have got a lot more members now. I mean, obviously you have neighbors that are not in on what's going on, but you're getting a lot more people still that want to join you, or are you just becoming stronger as the unit that you are, that you had become before all this?
Okay, we've, because... Basically, when they started threatening eminent domain, that was the final straw, and it was people either said, we're going to give in or we're going to fight. And so there are about 100 of us fighting. And so, you know, our group isn't going to get any larger from the landowner perspective because the rest have already signed easements. But we are getting stronger. And, you know, we're a very cohesive group. You know, we work together. This is one issue we all see eye to eye on. We have Tea Partiers in our group, and we have very liberals in our group and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one issue that we all agree on. We've got to protect the water, we've got to protect the land, and we've got to protect the people that live here. And those values are vital to the heartland here. And so it's something that, you know, we're strong, and, you know, we called them on their game, and they're backing down. You know, it's a marvelous victory in a way that they, you know, they decided to give in to a bunch of landowners before
right.
they got their butts whipped, you know.
Yeah, and you guys were organized. And it's funny because they had started getting everything secured in all the other states around, but you guys were the ones that really blocked, you know, you were the ones that really blocked it because of your organizing, you know, and your cohesiveness, I would say. And when you talk about it, are we talking strictly about Bold Nebraska, or are we talking about Bold Nebraska and others? Like, it's not just Bold Nebraska, right?
No, it's not just Bold Nebraska. The landowners, we've created an organization that's called Nebraska Easement Action Team.
Okay.
And that's just strictly landowners, you know, battling the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, Bold Nebraska is very, very vital and, you know, organizes a lot of events and brings in a lot of other groups and organizations as well as people. And we also have our Cowboy Indian Alliance, where we work with farmers, ranchers, and Native Americans all work together. And that carries on up into South Dakota. And so, you know, we're kind of have a two-state approach here, you know, and of course this particular issue just affects Nebraskans, but, you know, we have a lot of support from our South Dakota friends and relatives up there.
Right. It's good to be spread, you know, through a couple of things. And we're seeing that with other movements, you know, across the country where people are getting confused and thinking that, you know, one covers all. And that's one of the reasons I sort of asked that question, because, you know, there's a lot of different little wheels spinning. And, you know, you might think, well, that's fractious, you know, and it's splintery, but it's actually not. You know, it gives you an opportunity to, you know, work better together, I would think, you know, in some ways, you know, if it doesn't get too far out, you know, if it doesn't get too splintery, but, you know, if you have just enough, like everybody's got their little place to do their thing and to have their opinions and all the rest of that, that you can get more done than you could if you were trying to do it in one group where everybody sort of has to agree, you know, on everything you're doing. So that's good. Now, I understand that you guys, all of you, I think it was actually was a Bold Nebraska trip that you guys went somewhere together to Omaha to go watch the Pope give his address to Congress. Is that what happened?
Yeah, we did that last Thursday night. They they actually worked in cooperation with some other environmental groups in the Omaha area and faith groups as well. And held an event in Omaha where we watched the Pope's speech to Congress, and then we had some speakers that talked about some of the things that the Pope had talked about, and we also talked about one of the things that's happened in Nebraska is the University of Nebraska had done an intensive study on the impact of climate change in Nebraska, and that report was released late last fall. And so we had a person from the University of Nebraska there that went over some of the highlights of that report and talked about some of the implications for Nebraska if we do not, you know, we don't start making some changes.
Now, as a group, how many people? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Now go ahead. I kind of
I'm sorry. Everybody's still. I have to tell everybody that we can't see each other, so we just do our best on the live radio. But and for some reason, I like live radio. I can't figure that out. But I could. I tried to do the show non-live for the whole 6 months, and I couldn't even make one. It was horrible. So I just have to do it live. I don't know why. Even with all its foibles and you know knocks, you know, you get tripped up a little bit here and there. But so what was everybody's basic feeling, you know, about the Pope's address? Like, how were people feeling about, number one, what he said, and the reaction sort of that Congress had? Because I was on the phone with John Zangas, and that's actually a show that's two shows back, where he was talking about how odd it was that, you know, one side of Congress was standing up and clapping when the Pope said climate, and the whole other side was sitting down. And it was very awkward, and people were yelling, you know, get up, get up. Was that the same thing happening where you were? What was people feeling?
Yeah, we saw, you know, we were seeing that, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, the deniers are very obvious. you know, there they are. And, you know, they stood up for some of the others.
Right?
Yeah, they stood up for some of the other things the Pope said, but not when he talked about climate briefly there. They did not stand up, and, you know, to see some of the smug looks on their faces and so forth. So,
right.
That was kind of interesting as well.
How did you feel, though? How did you all feel? How many there were you on the trip?
Well, we had a theater in Omaha that they use.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. so I would say maybe 150 people came out mm-hmm. to this event would be mm-hmm. my approximate guess. There were quite a few people there, and it was you know, and of course I think as we were talking you know, in the conversation stage afterwards, the people that were there probably were not the ones that needed to be convinced that we
right.
need to do something about climate change.
Yeah.
You know,
a little preaching to the choir there.
exactly. So you know, we had that type of crowd. So
right.
you know, very very supportive of what the Pope mm-hmm. is doing, and we had a speaker from the faith community, and actually two of them. The one works with our state as a you know, faith leader across the state as far as
okay.
climate is concerned, and she spoke about some issues there, and then we also had a professor from Creighton University who came up and kind of helped mm-hmm. explain some of the things that the Pope was doing and what different things that he did meant and so forth, which was helpful to those of us that are not Catholic, you know.
Right,
to kind
right,
of
course.
Understand
yeah.
what, you know, what
right.
some of these things mean and in relationship to other things and so forth. So it was a very well planned out event, very well mm-hmm. attended. We had a cutout of the Pope, so we all get to get our picture taken with the Pope, and you know, had some fun things
so
too,
fun.
You know. So that was kind of
so much fun in Nebraska, folks. But they're fun people. I'm going to tell you that Art had a big concert on his farm too. That if for those who don't know, where he had he had Neil Young and Crosby, David Crosby. Oh, and Willie Nelson, I'm sorry. Now I just said a really stupid thing on live radio. He had Neil Young and Willie Nelson. That's what I said. I'm going to have to go in and edit that out because that was really bad. It's late at night, though. I usually do this show in the morning. But, yeah, so Neil Young and Willie Nelson and playing on the farm, and he does art in his cornfield and stuff like that. So they're having fun, even though they're fighting hard things. How did you guys feel as a group, do you think, and maybe personally yourself, about the Pope and what he did? And do you think, like, it made a difference? Do you think there's anything will come of it, that, you know, other than he was here and he talked and people who, you know, agree with him flocked to hear it
yeah.
and others
yeah.
didn't?
I would hope that some, you know, that it's an encouragement to make some things happen. I mean, you know, my goodness, we saw John Boehner was moved by him, and, You know, so there are probably other people that have also been moved by him. And I know, you know, there were some people that stood up and said he has no business talking about climate change. You know, I really feel that we hear from the scientists all the time. And one of the things that we need to hear from the faith community.
Right.
We need to hear of the impact of climate on the earth and from a faith perspective. And I think that's starting to happen.
Yeah.
And and the Pope doing that really helps to reinforce that. So, it's okay to talk about this in a faith perspective. And, you know, if it does that and gets this, you know, and gets this out, I know one of the professor that was there from Creighton University said that the university had invited students in from all the Catholic schools in the Omaha and surrounding area. And so they had a whole bunch, and they came to the university, and then they watched his speech live. And then, of course, they had conversation about that. And I think, you know, things like that, you know, getting students to talk about this is, you know, this is not something we usually talk about in the religious perspective, but now it's okay to talk about it. So let's start putting this in perspective. We have the scientists talking about it. Now let's get the religious, you know, arena talking about things. And I think things, you know, it's maybe going to be a good kickstart to get some things happening. And if, you know, if the Pope, if his visit does that, I think it'll be a great success.
Cool. Well, you know, and that's just the whole thing. And I thought it was encouraging. I definitely did. And I, you know, I'm not Catholic, but I'm a person of faith. But I grew up sort of prejudiced against Catholics because that was really the only differences in my town that I grew up. Everybody else, you know, there was no minorities. It was very much just a white middle class suburb, you know, in Chicago. And I never understood Catholicism, but I've really come, you know, sort of to understand it better and meet some people in the faith and also the Catholic worker, the people, you know, who execute, you know, who do the Dorothy Day version of it. You know, they're really inspiring to me, and I've had them on the show. We had LA Catholic worker from Skid Row on one of the initial shows, and I've been kind of telling people about that this week because that's where I learned about Dorothy Day. And it was just really fabulous stuff. So I agree. I hope that, you know, maybe it'll be just a little more something that gets the wheels turning in the faith community. And I know there is there are some people in the faith community. In fact, there's one black pastor. I cannot remember his name, but he's been really it's just on the tip of my tongue. I'm having memory issues lately, but he's been real involved too. Now, the other thing that happened this week was Shell miraculously went poof up in the Arctic. So that looked like it was good news, too. I'm just horribly, like, skeptical of everything. and I maybe because of knowing you, but, I mean, for some reason, to me, it looked a little bit like it might have been a red herring for something they're doing somewhere else or, you know, oh, that, another one of those, oh, that's good. See, they do care about us, you know, type.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
It, like, I'm serious. I mean, they knew all along it was going to be too expensive. You know, we were talking about that at the top of the show, you know, before the show went on, that, you know, if you're in business, you sort of know when your expenses exceed your profits, you know, or your, you know, what you're going to get for it. You know that that's not good business. And there was no doubt in anyone's mind that is a business person. You're a farmer, you know, you're not going to plant not enough to make your make back the money you spend on your seed and all the gas and stuff you spend on planting your field. But so it seemed to me like it was kind of just a show, more Schadenfreude. Well, what do you think? I mean, I'm glad it's gone back, but I mean,
yeah,
I'm still...
you know, well, once again, you know, probably the only reason we heard much about this was because we had a group of people that said, you know, you shouldn't do this. And they got out there in their boats and they barricaded that, you know.
Wait, they hung from the bridge too on ropes.
Yeah, and they hung from the bridge.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and you know, there you have citizens standing up and saying, this is wrong. This is wrong. And, you know, had it not been for some of that, they would have quietly gone up there and, you know, found out that it wasn't what they expected and quietly come back, and no one would have known the difference. But
I wonder,
you know,
what they really found. I wonder what they really found. They said there wasn't. I mean, they know there is oil in there. The press release was very, or the stories I read were very low on the details. It just said, you know, they didn't find what they were looking for, so they just, they're going to seal it up nice and safe. You know, and I'm like,
yeah,
right. You know, like that. I have a real anxiety. I mean, I have a huge anxiety about that art. I really do.
Yeah.
And I think you're the only other person who understands me. You know, that I just don't trust any of it. None of it.
Well, no, and you know what? And the thing is, you know, there are drilling in the Arctic is, you know, that's not like drilling in Texas. You know.
Nope.
So,
and that's hard
obvious.
Enough to do anyway, if anyone knows it. I mean, it is not, drilling is not easy, even when you're like on land and it's the old-fashioned equipment, even the new equipment. I watched a show, a reality show before I turned in my TV for good. It was called Black Gold. And they had three rigs competing against each other in East Texas. They were right next to each other. And whoever was going to strike the oil first was going to win. And they had an old rig and a kind of a medium old rig and a brand new fancy rig. And you just watch these people throwing chains around and getting hurt. And, you know, the blowout preventer going off and all these crazy things. And I just thought, that's like quite nutty. That's a quite nutty thing. And they would just go find these kids to come work in the fields. If one got hurt, they'd go to the bars that night and they'd pick up some new ones.
Yeah.
And they were very unskilled, very liable to be hurt, and you know, not really conscious of the blowout preventer and, you know, how much that was a big deal and stuff, you know. And you could learn a lot from that show. I did. But it didn't make, I think oil and gas has always been, it's never been a, you know, healthy place to work. It's never been, you know, unless you're in the boardroom somewhere, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Then it's fine.
And in the Arctic, you know, with all this, the weather and the,
oh, yeah.
You know, everything up there, you compound that, you know. And
right.
And I just, you know, I,
yeah.
I, like you say, I wish they would have given more details about, you know,
yeah.
why, you know, whether was it too deep to drill at the time being?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, you know, I could see not being cost effective at this time.
Right. But what if they knew that all along? That's I don't think that was it. I think perhaps maybe they actually know that they can't do it. There is that possibility that they are aware that they will kill the earth if they actually start up with their nonsense up there, you know, because they already saw what they did to the Gulf. I mean, I live on the Gulf. The Gulf is dead. It's dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's a dead zone, and it's just horrible. And it's funny when you bring up about, you know, the weather and everything. It's not just like the guys would be cold. All this stuff breaks. It breaks constantly. That show, Black Gold, if you can, I don't know if anybody can, you can get that on, you know, Netflix or whatever these Sulus or Hulus or whatever. But if you can get that, you need to see it because, you know, all they do is spend a lot of downtime. It's a lot of downtime. You know, and as a farmer, you know about that too. I mean, you're just as good as, you know,
exactly.
your equipment is going. And but I think in the back of my mind, I'm thinking also that they are well aware that they have blown it and that they're ready to that they see that, you know, they know that, you know, things are not great. So who knows? But the loose press release, That kind of gives you like, I wonder, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
and,
go ahead.
Well, and then like you said earlier too, are they trying to put, you know, get the media attention there, and then someplace else? They're doing something they shouldn't be doing, and
like Ecuador,
nobody's
and,
talking about that.
Yeah, I think the Amazon has taken some big hits over this year, and we haven't heard a lot about that. You know, like that's, they're just, you know, clear-cutting and, you know, it's very, I try not to know things, and I've tried not to know what's going on there, but I know it's not good. And I think that might have been, I always see the red herrings, man. I'm just down with the red. I think KXL was a red herring for something else, but, you know, I don't, maybe for these liquid natural gas ports that they're putting in, you know, in Oregon and down in Maryland, which are the ones that the VXC people who fasted for 18 days, those mighty warriors. Oh, my gosh, we're going to give them a big hand right now. They made 18 days without food. You know, those are the things that they're pretty much trying to protest. All fossil fuel infrastructure permitting, but those two in particular are the ones that we've discussed. And then we have Seneca Lake, which we're going to have a show about that coming up at some point soon. But anyway, yeah, I want to end the show tonight actually on a high note, because we have another high note. I mean, you just have good news tonight, Art. That's rare. But so we got to celebrate it. The Cowboy Indian Alliance was recently at your house, and you guys did some picking some of the sacred ponca corn. And they also had a very nice ceremony for you. What was going on? What is sacred ponca corn, and why does it have to be picked? And why is it at your house?
Well, I need to give a little history on that, if that's okay.
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Back in November of 2013, we held the Ponca Trail of Tears camp here on our farm. And we had quite a few attendees and so forth, and it was a cold, you know, almost wintry type time in November when we held this. So we would a lot of times spend, we were always around the fire, and sometimes we'd go brainstorming, and we'd crowd as many people as we could into the teepee and start, you know, trying to, what can we do? What can we do to stop KXL? And one of the Oklahoma Ponca suggested that one thing we could maybe do is plant corn in the path. And he talked about how back when the Ponca were moved on the Trail of Tears from this area of the state to Oklahoma, it was the spring of the year, and they'd planted their corn. So they'd planted their seed and didn't have any seed to take with them to Oklahoma. And the Lakota tribe that was given their land benefited from that seed. And so he and some others went to work, and they started hunting up seed. And they, you know, went to different keepers of the seed and different tribes and so forth. And they were actually able to find some of that seed that was 137 years old that their ancestors had planted near Niobrara. And they were able to get that bag of seed. And they also came up with some other corn. And we ended up with like five varieties of corn. And we planted that a year ago. We planted about 4 acres, and we planted it in the path of KXL, and our goals were two. One was to replenish the seed that the Ponca had lost 137 years before, and the other was to potentially stop the pipeline, because in the Ponca culture, corn is sacred. And it's part of their religious ceremony. And so if they were to put the pipeline through an area where that corn was, it would be violating their religion. So those are the two reasons we planted it. We planted about 4 acres. And we harvested a year ago. And that corn was all hauled to Oklahoma. And they shelled it out over the winter. And this spring, they used it to plant 80 acres of corn down there in the shape of the four winds. And then also they had more seed. And so some of the elders and leaders were able to gift for corn, and some of that corn was gifted in South America all the way up to Alaska, and it's become known as the Seeds of Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this year, since they planted those 80 acres in Oklahoma, there wasn't the need for us to plant as much here. So
mm-hmm.
we planted less than an acre of corn in the past. And we handpicked the corn. So Saturday was the day we had the ceremony, and then we went to work. We had probably 80-some people out here on Saturday to pick the corn.
Wow.
And after, yeah, oh, it was amazing. Didn't take long. You know, it had taken me a week by myself to pick it. But
you're like the Max Yasker of the next century, my friend.
Yeah. So
you have
we
a party at
corn.
Arch Farm.
We picked the corn, then we all came up to the farm to celebrate, you know, and so forth, and have some more ceremonies. And much to my wife Helen and my surprise, we were gifted with a beautifully painted buffalo robe. And
wow.
What
is a buffalo robe exactly? Because I know you gave some to Willie Nelson and
Neil Young.
Neil Young, I'm sorry, I'm just like having a memory thing. I don't know, I'm probably going to have to stop doing my show. But last year after the concert, so what is that exactly? What is a buffalo robe?
Well, it's a buffalo hide, and it's still, you know, it still has the hair on it
mm-hmm.
on the one side, and then the other side is, you know, tanned and so forth. And then in these cases, they create a painting. So we had a Native American artist create a painting. And, all three of these robes were actually done at the same time, and then they invited people to come in and help with the painting. So the one that we have has a different design than the one that Willie and Neil have.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very sacred ceremony. When these are gifted, they do not allow photographs and so forth. So the only photographs can be before or, you know, generally after the ceremony is over
right.
when the pictures are taken. So it's a very sacred ceremony, and it's a ceremony to show highest honor to the people that are gifted the robe. And
mm-hmm.
so we were very, very much honored to receive this, and obviously, you know, had no idea that this was coming. But, you know, because like we say, you know, it's not just us there. In Nebraska, there's 100 of us that are landowners, and there are a lot of other supporters that we have, and we all
mm-hmm.
work together as a cohesive team to work on this thing. But you know, so we were really blessed to receive this thing, and
wow,
you know,
mm-hmm.
so it's something that we're trying to find a wall big enough to put it on.
It's a nice big tall. I know, and there's a picture of it in the slideshow. So if anybody wonders what that was actually what that was, and I didn't even find out till tonight when I talked to Art. So. But that's more fruit coming from the Cowboy Indian Alliance, actually.
Yeah.
You know, which I was talking to John about on the other show, too. And just we were both sitting there and just remembering the teepees that were erected on the mall. And and like you said, I mean, it's like all this, the ceremony and sort of the idea of, you know, the indigenous people of spanning, of spreading things out. You know, and that you know, the elements of the earth, you know, take it and bring it to where it needs to be. Like it needed to be on the you know, the pathway of the KXL, and which happened, you know, you had the Trail of Tears actually running over your property, as I recall.
Right.
I think that's correct. And that's the Trail
yes.
of Tears means they were led to slaughter, you know, and you know, not that long ago, you know, or just take it away from their land. You know, there was more than one Trail of Tears, correct? I mean,
and this one happens to be the Ponca Trail of Tears.
Right, exactly.
You know, it was from this area to northern Oklahoma.
Right. And
Chief Standing Bear.
Okay, Chief Standing Bear. And that, you know, everybody was sort of like, everybody was watching Cowboy Indian Alliance on the Mall, which lasted for a couple of days. I think it was
a whole week.
Yeah. It was a week. Was it a week? It was so great. It was so great. But just that there was a lot of ceremony going on all the time. And that's what's going to happen when you're, you know, with, you know, indigenous people, is everything has a, there's ceremony around a lot of things. And it was kind of a way to, I saw it as like a really a way for that alliance to solidify and actually become very real, you know, a lot more than just like a, where we're going to meet, we'll sign a paper, and then we'll have drinks and a band afterwards. I mean, it's just such a different way of consummating, you know, relationship in, you know, with that had been damaged for so long, you know, just bringing it together. I don't know if I use the right word there, but I mean, just pulling everything together in a way that really it will stay together, as opposed to the way maybe, you know, an average white person might try to make something like that happen. Am I making any sense? I don't know.
Yeah, yes, you are. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was there was so much awareness by those, you know, that almost week there on the Mall. You know, it was absolutely wonderful. It was actually the same artist that we had a teepee
really?
There. It was actually a teepee that was here on our farm for the Trail of Tears.
Right,
that
right.
That was in D.C., and it was painted. And the artist that did the design is the same artist that did the buffalo robe here.
Oh,
so,
now I got goosebumps. That's bad. Because I watch that teepee being painted every day. I mean, it's so great. I'll say one thing, you know, Juice Wrap News just did a thing about the internet and, you know, the big fight for, you know, who's going to control the internet and how valuable it is. And I thought of, you know, the guy who played the piano in Getze Park as being like kind of my night for when I realized the internet was as important as it was. But also, definitely the Cowboy Indian Alliance Week. And just all the things, the big round dance that happened and the singing and the chanting and the ceremony, I just love it. And I had actually been attending an all-faith church here that was very centered around the Four Directions and everything Indigenous. And Black Elk played a big role in what they were doing there. And I had just, it was funny because I had just learned all that right before all this happened. So it was like a very fortunate thing for me to be able to actually sort of know what it sort of meant, you know, in a real way, in a real, having practiced it, you know, sort of way. And it is very honoring, and it just, it sobers everybody up, and everybody gets a chance to, you know, and when I say that word, I mean, it just brings weight to the situation is what I'm trying to say, you know, to what's being done and what's taking place and how it's not a joke. There's no you know, nobody's whispering or not paying attention during one of those ceremonies. You know, it's very, you're paying attention to everything that's going on. And it's like it seems to get inside you more than it would something else. And I'm glad that it's still going on with you guys. And I credit, you know, the Cowboy Indian Alliance and the Indigenous Peoples Movement that's taking place, you know, when they walked from the head of the Mississippi to the end. I don't remember who the woman was that did that, but it was pretty powerful. She was an elder, and walked all the way from there. That was one of those things. And when the kids walked all the way across Canada to Ottawa, mm-hmm. I got to watch that too. And that was like, I never bawled my eyes out so bad when they reached there and they talked to them. And it was just like, they marched like 1,500 miles or something, like in like 50 below. And that was when I was like, okay, this is real and this is awesome. And it's neat that it's kind of centering, because even Nebraska is kind of like the middle of the country, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're the heartland of America. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that has significance, I believe, for the Indigenous people as well. I would think they would say that that's very significant, you know, where you're located and where all this is coming out of now, you know, from your farm. So I would say that. Cool. Well, anyway, so you've got your buffalo robe and you had picture corn, and we've got, you know, you don't have to deal with this going to the district court now, correct? Or is that still on?
Well, we don't know yet.
Okay. But that was what that was about. We were going to talk about you going to district court, so that...
On October 19th was the scheduled date for district court to deal with all this.
Okay.
And at this time, it's unclear, you know, what exactly, you know, can transpire there, and, you know, basically trying to figure out what, with what happened, what does it all mean, what are the legal repercussions, and how does it affect the demise of this law, and do we need, as landowners, do we need to somehow continue this lawsuit, and can we continue this lawsuit so that we can get rid of a very unconstitutional law?
Or can you bring a lawsuit? I mean, right?
Well,
can you bring a lawsuit? Yeah, I mean, you could bring a lawsuit. Or no?
Yeah, I'm sure we can.
That's too technical. I don't want to get you in trouble. You said yeah, we'll just leave it at that. But other than that, what's next for you? You're going into the winter here. You know, what do you guys got planned? I mean, because it seems like Tim DeChristopher wants to ramp things up quite a bit here in the next 12 months. From what I'm hearing him say. And I'm sure you guys are, you know, tapped into that and some of the other stuff that's going on. Are you have other things going on that you're getting ready to kind of do, or is it just one day at a time?
Well, some things are in the planning stages. We're obviously waiting for the president to reject KXL, and we think that's going to happen soon.
Really? Okay. All right.
We think, I mean, you know, this is speculation.
Right. But it wouldn't mean anything anyway, because someone could unreject it. So.
That he has, in order to keep peace with Canada, he has agreed not to make his announcement until after the elections, which are on the 19th. If you buy into that scenario, we're looking for a rejection shortly after the 19th.
Okay.
If one believes that maybe we had all hoped that he and the Pope would, you know, when they were together, he would say, you know, this is how I, you know, today, this is what I'm going to do about climate change today, and that is reject KXL. But that didn't happen. So, you know, and, you know, obviously, you know, he could also wait till Paris to the climate thing over there and make that announcement there. So, you know, there are opportunities. I think it's time that he gets it done. It needs to be done this year.
Yeah, the luxury of waiting is not a good part of this equation.
Right. And
we don't have
luxury
in this game. Waiting on climate change is not what you want to be doing. You want to sort of be doing something now. Yeah. So that's crazy. Well, you know, I just want to say, you know, whatever you got going on, you know, you're always welcome to come on as long as I'm, you know, making this radio here. And, you know, we're here for you guys and whoever else that you know out there. I will tell you also this. I am looking for young people to come on my show. So if you know any young people, I mean young people, they can be young. They can even be in junior high, because I had Shuteska Martinez on my show, you know, when he was 13 or 12, I think. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Eve Squatley was on also when he was on his, you know, not speaking strike. And that was really good stuff. But I think I want to hear more from the children. I think that, we're doing stuff. Us old folks are doing things and all that. But it's not that interesting. When you think about in terms of, you know, our context versus their context. I don't think they're getting enough air. I don't think they're getting enough, you know, they're not getting heard enough. So I'm up for that. I'd really like that. And so if anybody's listening to this show that knows some young people that, you know, want to come on and talk, we've had Earth Guardians on. They're always welcome on the show. So they would be welcome, or anybody else, you know, that wants to come on and use these airways to speak, because I think they need to be heard. So they're invited on. And with that note, I think you've had a pretty long day. And we just want to say thank you so much for coming on, and that we'll just be in touch. And it's always a pleasure. And please give my love to Helen as well. Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. And it's been a good day today. So.
Amen. All right. Thank you so much, Art. Take care. Bye.
Bye now.
So that was Mr. Art Tandrup, and he is just a great guy, and I'm glad we had some good news to give to you tonight. I'm going to close the show with a song called Here's the Moonlight for Your Day from the guests I had on Friday night, Forrest and the Photons, some young people that are making their voices heard through music, Nick Hill, Stuart Wiki, and Scott Boyce. Here we go, and I will see you guys Thursday at 11 with Ed Woodham. From Art in Odd Places. Do not miss that one. Thanks, everybody.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I've been on your rubber. It's the moonlight. It's the moonlight.